B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
3 o'clock hour. It's Mike Missinelli Show. It's on 97.5 The Fanatic. Also NBC Sports Philadelphia. And today, 3:30, our continuing series on Get to Know Them, our NBC Sports Philly personalities. And today, I look forward to this. Smooth Danny.
Yeah.
Danny Pommels, who you see on TV. I look at him, I go, he's Euro tight.
You're talking about his clothes?
He's Euro tight.
Man, he's clean.
He's got the clean, tight look.
He always does. And working there, I see his office set up. He's got sneakers. He's got
He's got sneakers that match the outfit.
Yeah.
You know? The tight coat.
All set up. Yeah. So I'm interested. And he's a guy you can talk about a lot of things. He'd go around the horn. You talk about anything, million things.
Yeah, Danny,
him.
A long time ago, and I can't believe it. I couldn't have had much FaceTime interaction with him.
Yeah.
He claims to have been an intern for me way back in the day when I was working as the sports anchor of PHL Philadelphia TV news team.
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing that story.
And
he told me about it.
He said you were recognized because I had dreadlocks. But and I, for the life of me, can't remember Danny back then in the day.
Yeah, he mentioned that to me. Like, you know.
I got to talk to him about this.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, 3 o'clock hour. Listen, TV is saving us. I think, like, what would we do without television right now? And sometimes you just need a night off, right, of television. Because you can watch stuff, and you can watch more stuff about the COVID-19, and you can bounce around on Netflix, and you can try to find a new show. Sometimes you just need a night off. And last night provided me a night off, and I watched Midnight Run.
Oh, you watched Midnight Run?
Back to back.
You watched it twice.
I watched it twice. How sick is that?
I haven't seen Midnight Run in a long time.
You haven't?
Not a long time.
Let me tell you something about Midnight Run. And this is the thing I noticed last night. You can almost quote every line in it. Like, every line is a cool line.
Is it?
Yes. Every line in the movie is a cool line. The interaction between De Niro and Charles Grodin, and the gold that it produces, plus Jimmy Serrano.
Yeah.
And on all his lines, every line is like, you can text your buddy a line. Every line in the movie is like that.
It was on TV, or did you pull
it? It was
out
on television. It was on a pay channel. I forget what it was on last night.
Yeah, because that's my issue with it. The reason I haven't seen it in a long time is
it's a premium channel last night.
Yeah, and I had the premium channels, but a lot of times when I'm scrolling, I don't scroll all the way to the premium channel.
Oh, really?
Sometimes I feel like sometimes I'm wasting my money.
Oh, see, that's the first thing I do is go through the premium channels. You know, I'll see what, like, if a movie like that, a go-to movie's on that I've seen 100 times, I'll watch it again. Midnight Run, I can watch it over and over again. It's weird.
Well,
I watch the double one after another. I watch the first one, which is like whatever, an hour and 45, and then I stay and I watch it again as I went to bed.
I'll get to it during this. We got another month. I'll get to it.
It's without question my top comedy.
It's your top
number
one. It
absolutely is.
How about that?
And it just wins me over every single time it's on.
Look at that.
I'm never bored by it. It's weird. How many people feel that way about Midnight Run? People haven't seen it. Because people join in. Well, sometimes I'll throw a line out, or somebody will throw a line at me.
Yeah.
And from Midnight Run. And then I'll go back and I'll throw them a line. And then it generates this everybody throwing in lines.
Right. Kind of like how people do Anchorman.
Right. And you realize, but see, this movie, every line is quotable. Like, Anchorman doesn't have that kind of versatility. Midnight Run has the versatility of every line being quotable that you can shoot your friend.
Really?
Yes.
I'm going to have to rewatch
it. It's uncanny.
I'm going to have to rewatch it. It's been a very long time.
All right. Go to Greg in Bethlehem. Greg, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Greg.
Hey, guys. Mike, I sort of agree with you. I think these big corporations do have an ethical obligation to help their people out. The reality, I think, is that unless the government finds some way to provide incentives, there's only a few that will step up and do it. But I think that's, you know, that's part of government's role is to, you know, help people see the light, you know. I mean, I don't know what you think, but, you know, part of the problem that we're, part of the reason we're having the problem we have now with this virus, you know, is capitalism going crazy and, you know, people going for the almighty dollar. So that's why we're doing so much business in China.
Yeah. And I try to boil it down to be simple, fundamental. Like I'll give you an example. All right. Now, you say you're Corporation X. All right. And you're used to a certain profit line and a projection on how much money you're going to make. It's always how much money you're going to make. You're going to always be in the black. Right?
Right.
So let's say Corporation X asks their employees to take a 15% pay cut.
Right.
All right. Now, they may have legitimate reasons for that because they go, okay, well, listen, our advertising, there's going to be a decline in our advertising dollars and we're going to be losing money. But they're losing money on how it pertains to their projected profit line, right?
Right. Sure.
So, the corporation may lose money, but in the overall scope of things, they've made a ton of money in the past. And the money they lose if they pay their employees, don't cut their employees for, say, 6 months, which is how long this is projected to last, is it really going to break them? And on top of that, they can take a tax loss.
Well, that's right. And I think that's where, you know, the government may have to do even more than what's in the current tax code just to entice these companies to do the right thing. You know, because outsourcing, I mean, I always thought outsourcing just for the almighty dollar was kind of unethical and cost American jobs. But, you know, I think this whole crisis kind of proves that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you, Greg. It's a good call. Like I say, I'm not a business genius. I just go basically by fundamentals. And maybe economic professors out there are thinking I'm whacked. I'm just going on base logic here. Yeah, your company, as far as your bottom line and where your projections are and how much your profit's going to grow from year to year to year and all those things that are measured out by people that are a lot smarter than me, you may lose a couple dollars. That couple dollars would be a tax loss. And you, in the past, have benefited from the labor of your employees, whereby you made a lot of money. So this is one year you go, I got to bite the bullet. Now, capitalists don't think like that. Corporation people don't think like that. Money people don't think like that. And I'm thinking of it like a base level, logical level, which may not apply.
Yeah, because a lot of people, it's just about that next quarter, that next quarter, that next quarter, that next quarter.
And they're all projections on what their profit margin should be.
Right. And I hope people understand you said it more than once, though. You're talking about the top companies. You're not talking about a local company with 100 employees where this will put them out of business. You're not talking.
Exactly.
You're talking about where you got billionaires and then the person underneath the top person's a billionaire and the person underneath that.
Correct.
That's
what I'm talking.
Have more. So when that caller said it, he had a smart business mind, they have so much money that they can't spend it. Like they were talking about certain, like Bill Gates. He doesn't really run any business. He's giving tons of money away. 100 million here, 25 million. He's giving away tons of money. But at his peak at Microsoft, they were talking about how he could spend $1 million a day for X, and then his wife, and then his daughter, and his grand. Like, we're talking about people that can just spend, and never run out of money. There's a set of those people that are different, yet they don't operate differently a lot of time. They operate like the guy who's about to go out of business if they had a bad week.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Manny in Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Manny.
Yes. Hey, Mike.
What's up, Manny?
Yeah, I was trying to piggyback off what you guys were talking about. Like, I work for a pretty big company, and right now, like, the way they're doing us is, like, totally wrong. Like, we haven't gotten a raise in 3 years. That's number one. On top of that, like, with everything that's going on, they don't even have a disinfect area for us to disinfect ourselves before we leave. And, like, my wife is so scared of me bringing something back home because of all the drivers we have, all the pickers we have in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And then these guys, you know, they drive all
the time. What have you guys asked for? Have you guys asked for anything in particular to management?
Well, we asked for, some Lysol, maybe some masks, gloves.
And they won't provide that?
No. It's hard for us to get toilet paper out of these people. So recently we asked for, you know, like, because a lot of the other companies right now are starting to wear it. They're going to start giving out hazard pay because a lot of the employees, especially us being a union, we don't feel safe in this thing. And the big thing is we feel unappreciated.
Wait a minute, hold it. You're a union shop?
Yeah, we're a union shop.
Well, how is this possible that you're not getting basic needs being a part of a union?
Who's your union rep? I don't want to lose my job.
Here's what I'm advising you to do: get a bunch of employees and get you and have a conversation with your union rep. That's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
What is he doing? Is he walking around doing nothing?
I really couldn't tell you. It's weird, the whole situation.
Man, believe me when I tell you, you're in the food industry, right? You're delivering stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're a union shop, that's a basic need, and your union guy has to take care of that. Now, I understand, like, if it's a small company, you run the risk of getting fired. I get it. Maybe the union rep is afraid of that. He's trying to preserve his guys, get jobs. But we're talking about fundamental stuff. You take that in front of a labor board, who's going to come out on top? All right, let's go with Justin in Allentown. Justin, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, Justin?
I was just wondering what your take was on a life-sustaining job, since that's what Governor Wolf, he put out to only keep open.
Yeah.
So, like, what's your take on that?
What's the question? Like, it's a pretty general
What are some job types that are life-sustaining?
Non-essential and essential, we're talking about. Not life-sustaining, right?
Okay.
Essential and non-essential.
Right.
What do you do?
So I work in a furniture manufacturer plant.
Uh-huh.
So we originally got furloughed, but then our CEO put in a waiver to come back.
Uh-huh.
So do you think making office furniture is life-sustaining?
At this particular moment, no, it's not essential.
Right. So don't you think that Governor Wolf should, revise who he... grants the waiver to, if he's actually serious about stopping it?
Yeah, but what did he do for you? What was the waiver? Where did the waiver go?
The waiver was just to return to work, which is cool.
Okay, and did the waiver come through for you to return to work?
Right.
But you don't want to return to work.
But what about people's health, about spreading the virus?
Well, that's what your company has to take hold of. Of the situation. I mean, Governor Wolf can't legislate how your company acts. He can only look at what the non-essential versus essential. Now, I don't know why you would get a waiver for office furniture.
Right, yeah.
I would have to look at, like, what the language is on why you were granted a waiver. It doesn't seem like it would be an essential situation right now. So your fear is that you got a waiver to go back to work, and you don't want to go back to work to put yourself at risk.
But you have to.
Is that what you're saying?
Right.
So you're forced to do something you don't want to do.
Right.
Now you're getting paid, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, the only thing I would do, is this is a management problem. They need to provide the most health beneficial conditions possible. When your boss or your corporation asked for that waiver, what did they expect? That life would just go on?
I have no idea, honestly.
I would love to be like the advocate for every company, but I get no more information on what's going on why that company would request the waiver. Obviously, they want to continue to. But who's buying office furniture now? Offices are shut down. Like, why would that be essential?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he had a certain contract, and they had to get stuff done at a certain amount of time, and. He needed that production.
Know more about that situation to have an informed opinion on that.
Yeah, because maybe they'd be in breach if they didn't make X number of desks, desk because the contract was already paid for.
Yeah,
I'm trying to imagine something like that.
Yeah, I got to have more information on that. But it's listen, if the governor's office signed the waiver and determined that it was essential, then it's up to the boss to implement safety guidelines, basic safety guidelines through all this.
And that's apparently been the biggest thing for people. A lot of people aren't necessarily complaining about having to go to work, but they're going to work unprotected. A lot of people feel like
now,
at their place.
I would think it would be fairly easy to have social distancing in a situation like that. And if it's not, you make damn sure that it's easier.
Right, you have to do something different.
Yeah, and sanitize and provide masks and gloves and all that kind of stuff. Make sure the working environment is between people, there's at least 6 feet between people. I would think that would be implemented. AJ in West Philly, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. AJ.
Well, Mike.
What's up, AJ?
Yo, I think I cracked the Da Vinci Code, Mike, with the draft.
You cracked the Da Vinci Code? You got it all ready to go?
Man, I ain't had nothing else better to do. So I always thought, and this is what I don't give. People say it's a deep draft for a certain thing. And then they try to move up to get it. If it's a deep draft, that means in the fourth and fifth round, I can get a higher quality than normally in that year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what a deep draft means. So I changed my whole strategy and said, forget drafting a wide receiver. The main thing I think that we need is either Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen, the linebackers, to get a mean linebacker to go with this defense.
AJ, you're smart. But, you're a smart guy, right?
I know the Eagles don't draft.
Yeah, well, then why are you even thinking about it?
Because looking at it from an objective view, and we know in any sport, up the middle is key.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't anymore. It's not that key. You're a smart guy. You go cuckoo on me. You know a linebacker should not be their number one pick. Why are you holding on?
Because no, I'm not saying when I did this simulation, pick the linebacker first, pick the corner in the second round, and the safety in the third round, and imagining the impact that would have on the defense with this defensive line and that veteran corner we just grabbed. We're looking to try to get back to a top 10 defense.
Who's the most important member of this team?
What'd you say?
Who's the most important member of the Eagles?
It's Carson Wentz.
Who's he throwing? By your plan, who's he got?
What I was going to say was, in the fourth round, we got those three picks.
In the fourth round? Hold it. Don't listen, listen. You're telling me in the fourth round that's adequate enough to give Carson Wentz?
I think two names is one guy from Minnesota, Tyler Johnson.
AJ, listen, I love you. I love you. I love your calls. There's two things here. Number one is I think that you go down a wrong road sometimes. Number two is I think you outsmart yourself. I think you're trying to outsmart the people.
No.
Yeah. Yes. It doesn't make any bit of sense to draft the linebacker number one and then wait till the fourth round to add receiving help.
When you do it in that way, those receivers can become just as good as with Justin.
How? Why? Where does it say that in your book?
Listen, whatever production that Justin Jefferson would give us if we stayed packed, not saying move up and get the top guy, of course, if we got him, I think...
Well, you're not going to get Justin Jefferson. You drafted a linebacker.
No, I'm saying if you stayed there and drafted a wide receiver with your number one pick, I think the production that a fourth wide receiver would be the same, but the difference would be if that linebacker and that safety and that corner can come and play, you transform your defense down to something.
All right, listen, man. I love him, but my man sometimes goes too hard on his ability to recognize players.
Yeah. Listen, I guess hypothetically, if they don't have ammo to move up, you could talk me into, I don't know how, in the second round. In his scenario, the first three rounds he went defense.
Yeah.
And nothing for your quarterback until the fourth round. Yeah. Now, why can a fourth-round receiver be as good as a first-round receiver, but a fourth-round linebacker couldn't be as good? You get what I'm saying?
Like, AJ fashions himself as like an under-the-radar talent scout.
Right.
And it's all right. It's fun. But come on, man. What they really need is linebacker. No, they don't.
I need, in the first three rounds, I would prefer two offensive weapons. Maybe I might go receiver-receiver. I might go receiver-corner-receiver. In the first three rounds, I need two things from my offense because I didn't help him a lot in free agency offensively. I did defensive moves in free agency. And then I need defense somewhere in there. You got to get depth, and maybe you can find somebody. But how do you not? How do you pay a quarterback and then say, you know what? I'm not going to give him anybody to the fourth round.
Yeah.
Well, why pay him?
Exactly. All right, let's go Drew Westchester. Drew, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Drew?
Hey, Mike. How you doing today, buddy?
Good, man. How you doing?
Hey, another day of self-quarantine, man. So I just enjoy listening to you guys. And, you know, one of the reasons why I love listening to you guys so much is because, you know, we can talk sports. We can talk really important topics, too, you know, with, like, the whole, you know, business and what's going on with that.
Yeah.
And then we can talk fun stuff, too, like Midnight Run, man. I think I might have watched it about 10 times in the last 2 weeks. It's been on, like, every day.
It's on every day because it's got such a high watching factor.
Yeah, every time I see it on,
they throw it on all the time because they know people just gravitate to it.
I do. And you know, I don't even like Charles Grodin. I've never been a fan of him whatsoever, but he's just perfect in that role.
He absolutely is.
And you know, so I just, you're saying that, I actually just got done watching another great movie from 1983. It's a high school football movie, All the Right Moves.
Oh yeah, that's one of my faves.
Yeah, man, I haven't seen it in a while, you know, so with Tom Cruise back in 83, Leah Thompson in her prime.
Stefan Djordjevic. Come on, man.
Yeah, man, Stefan Djordjevic, you know, he gets lucky at the end. The coach, you know, has a heart eventually, so not to ruin it for anybody, sorry. just want to say thanks again for being on the air and just doing what you guys are doing and being there and just helping us get through our days, man.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. Take care. Yeah, thank you very much. There's a scene in I think that a lot of the dialogue between De Niro and Charles Grodin in that movie was ad-libbed. Because Charles Grodin has that ability to just say stuff.
Yeah.
And they're in a train car, like a freight train car towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get to L.A. And he's handcuffed to the thing. And De Niro's not talking to him because he screwed him. He tried to get him off the train. And so De Niro's got a cigarette. He's smoking cigarettes through the whole movie. And he's just sitting there. And Grodin says to him, "Hey, Jack, you ever have sex with an animal?" And you can see De Niro, like, is trying not to break character. Mm-hmm. But I think he's like this little tiny smile comes on his face, like he's... And I think they kept that scene in for that reason.
Yeah, if it's an ad lib, because you may not be able to ad lib it again, they'll leave it in. Yeah.
Exactly, because he's supposed to be stone faced and mad and angry. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he says that line, you see his mouth change expressions. I love to interview both those dudes on. Is Grodin still alive or is he dead? You remember he had his own talk show?
I don't remember.
You remember the Charles Grodin show?
No.
What was the Charles Grodin show on? He was like a Johnny Carson type of guy.
I'm gonna see
was it what? Oh damn!
I gotta see if
was
he's
it
alive.
Was it on Channel 12? Was it PBS station? He's still alive. Yeah, he's still alive. He's 84. Oh, what the hell is that show? The Charles Grodin show. All right. Anyway, 610-632-0975. He was a talk show host.
I'm looking. They've got a whole bunch of stuff listed. Had a long career.
He's talk like show, real, right? Real productive.
Yeah, Charles
Grodin
show on CNBC.
CNBC. Yeah, he had this deadpan way of asking these questions.
Yeah, 95 to 98.
Yeah, I usually watch it all the time. All right, 610-632-0975. Danny Pommels joins us on the other side. Our Get to Know You Better NBC Sports Philly series back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
All right, 3:30, Mike Missinelli Show. Let's take care of our Twitter poll. Natalie Eganoff is, of course, part of the program, working remotely. We miss Nat.
I miss you guys.
Seen you in a long time, Nat.
I know.
You know, the animation's not working for me anymore.
I know.
All right, anyway, our Twitter poll, it's brought to us by Paul B. Moyer & Sons. Give us an update.
All right, we have over 1,700 votes on today's poll. Do large corporations owe something to their employees through a pandemic? 85% say yes, 15% say no.
All right, 85. 50, I want to talk to the 15 and say no. I do. I 15 and say no, I want to get into a discussion of why they think no. Because there's two sides to it.
Always.
You know, I want to learn. All right, man. All right, this is going to be exciting. NBC Sports Philly, we're trying to get to know the personalities a little better. We're trying to let you get to know the personalities a little better because right now they're kind of in limbo. They don't know what they're doing from day to day. They're writing on the website, but you know, TV people have to be on TV. That's what defines them. All right, and Danny is also doing a Sixers Talk podcast, so we still got that going, but we miss him on NBC Sports Philly on the screen. Let's welcome in on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast, Danny Pommels. Danny P, how you doing?
Mikey Med. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, this is fun. We got all you guys, we're going to get on once a week and find out. Let's go deep with you people, you know, because with a lot of people want to know your background, because you are a proud son of Philadelphia and Temple University. So,
that
so
is true.
Tell us how you got to where you are.
You really want me to go that way?
No, well, yeah, I want you to get a Cliff Notes version. But you know, well, the there's a lot of people out there look up to you.
You know, I gotta can't put the cart before the horse. I wouldn't be the broadcaster I am without some tutelage from the one and only Mike Missanelli, because I interned with you.
You know,
Jenna Wolf. Back in the PHL 17, that's a bust out, to quote Mike Smith. That's a bust out.
It is a bust out, and it's a bust out because, like, I look at you now, and I have no idea that you were the intern, like, way back in the day.
I mean, why would you? You've been around the block and done so many things since then. But I used to have cornrows back then. I was more to myself, Danny Pommels. But
you were more to yourself. Now, did we get along?
I can tell so many stories about you.
Oh, no,
just the way you swaggered in after your radio shift. I remember one time you and Cecil Martin went nose to nose.
Oh, we did. Well, tell me that story, because I don't remember that story. So here's the deal. So I'm the sports anchor on the nightly news, and I would do the radio show, and Anthony Ray show head right to the studio, and who was producing at the time.
George Wallace.
George was great. George, my producer. All right, so you were an intern, and so you guys would put, because I didn't know anything about working the video machine, so you guys all had the video, and I would just write to the video, and then we'd just hang out until the show would start. So it was a cool chapter of my life. I really liked it. But
go ahead. Two quick stories.
Uh-huh.
One, I remember one time, this is when Maniac was kind of like coming into his own. So this is like 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And one time you had told George, you came into the sports office and told George that he was walking down the street with his girlfriend and you were driving by and you saw him walking. So you started heckling him from the car, but he wouldn't turn his head to see who it was because he was afraid of somebody was like really like giving him the business, but it was you giving him a hard time. But the Cecil Martin story goes that, the Eagles had lost, and there was another classic one of those games. I forget who they played, but Donovan, you know, classically started with those worm balls where he's throwing like the first five, six, seven passes at people's feet at the start of the game. You know, he had to get warmed up a little bit. So, you know, we're all Philly sports fans in a sense because we grew up in the area, but we also cover the team. So there's a bit of a dichotomy there, but you had it stuck in your head that you had to talk about that McNabb stuff from the onset because you were so tired of seeing it and it happened so many times that you wanted to get Cecil's perspective on it, and Cecil did not want to talk about it. But he was talking to the producer about how, you know, what going over the show and what was actually going to happen, and you just cut in like, nah, what we're going to talk about is McNabb and these balls that he throws to people's feet, and Cecil wouldn't want to talk about it. And this is a guy who just lost the game. He's a little, you know, beklempt and overwhelmed, and you were just, I tell people all the time, like, you have always been the same. I haven't changed a bit. That's what I like.
Well, like, here's the thing. I hope I wasn't disrespectful, Cecil. He was a good dude. He was the Sunday night guy who would come in. But, like, I'm looking at it from, like, the viewer viewpoint. He says, everybody's thinking the same thing, man. He made some bad throws in the game. So it's like, for me to ignore it, I'm in a tough spot there because I got a player who I respect. He doesn't want to talk about it. He wasn't the one to bury his own teammate. But I've got to bring it up or I lose cred with the listeners. listener, right? Or the viewer. So yeah, I do. But he was a good dude. Like that,
he was a good dude, and turned out to be not too shabby broadcaster as well.
he did pretty well. All right, so like I'm curious, like you took a path, like you from the Hunting Park section, North Philly. So where'd you go to high school, Danny?
I went to St. Joe's Prep in Bishop McDevitt. 3 years at the Prep, 1 year at McDevitt.
Okay, you're a McDevitt guy. All right, I get it.
Went to Temple University, and I thought I wanted to do news. And I did all the Chamber of Commerce meetings and the Jesse Jackson coming to town and John Street press conferences and all that stuff. And then one day someone didn't show up for a sports assignment. It didn't have anything to do. And they said, oh, you want to go cover the game? And I was like, oh, yeah. You know, I like sports. I just always thought I wanted to be a news guy. And I went to the game and Iverson scored like 45 points. And I know, you know, those classic Iverson scrums after the game. Imagine me being a novice sportscaster and in, you know, rubbing elbows with Phil Jasner and, you know, all those guys asking Iverson questions, you know, 20 deep at his locker.
Uh-huh.
And he would always play those locker games where he would take a shower and come back and change his clothes and then leave and come back, and everybody's waiting to, he knows everybody's waiting to talk to him. But and I would get to go back to the station and be creative with my writing and make jokes and say, you know, Iverson had more moves than the U-Haul truck. And that creativity kind of like really appealed to me because I wasn't covering fires and murders and things like that. And the rest is history.
Well, you know, here's the reason why, you TV guys, one of the things I admire about you is that you have to pay dues and you have to go to other markets. Now, I was lucky in that I had established something. Now, all of a sudden, I found myself on TV. I felt like the luckiest guy in the world because you had to travel. Like, you had to send out tapes and get entry-level jobs. So you started out where? In Maryland?
Salisbury, Maryland. And, actual tapes. And this is back when 30th Street Station, I know I'm dating myself a bit, 30th Street Station was 24 hours, so I would find out about these jobs and print out these emails on resume sheets and all this expensive paper I couldn't afford back in the day, and then send them out, mail them out to all these places, and you wouldn't hear a darn thing back. It'd just be crickets, and you'd be sending them to Pocatello, Idaho, and, you know, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and all these places. And then I finally landed at Salisbury, Maryland, went from Salisbury, you know, covering like the Orioles and Maryland Eastern Shore to Harrisburg, covering Penn State and the Ravens and everything. That,
well, you also went out west, didn't you?
To Sacramento.
You went to Sacramento, which California. Is really interesting because here you are, like, you know, Salisbury, Maryland is still on the East Coast, still a familiar area. And all of a sudden you got to shoot all the way out to the West Coast of Sacramento. At that point, you say, well, I'm saying goodbye to Philadelphia. Did you think you would be out there, or did you always have the desire to come back here?
I never wanted to land in my hometown. I'm obviously just diehard Philly sports fan, but I never thought I was like, oh, I got to get back to Philly. But lo and behold, that's how the way it worked out. But I was in California loving it. I mean, come on, Mike, you've been to Cali. You know how beautiful it is out there. It's hard to say no. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I don't know Sacramento. I don't know how beautiful it is out there. But, you know, Cali is beautiful.
Short, so you winner. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, so you would have stayed out there.
I would have. It didn't work out that way. And I always, you know, kind of saw myself climbing the ladder. Sacramento was like market 19, uh-huh. You know, Philly's market 4.
Right.
So I definitely had the big city, you know, inclinations. Uh-huh. But I love California, man. I miss it. So maybe one day.
All right, cool. So now you get back here, you do a great job. I love your little sayings. I do take, so I know you've heard me rip you for saying on the bump, right?
No, That's perfectly fine. I take a rip from you. It's like a feather in my
cap. I'm waiting for Danny to go on the bump.
On the slab.
But yeah. You also have a great way of delivering the sports, which I really like. And here's the thing, you know, because Comcast Sportsnet at the time, I think they started dressing down their people. Like they wanted to go a little more casual. And you weren't having it. You're like, nah, man, I'm going mod fit, tight fit sport coat. And you brought that back, I thought, with the tight jeans and the varietal kicks. Like, I think you brought that look back, and now everybody's going sport coat.
I'm just trying to throw some flavor out there, man. You know what I mean? Go with how I feel.
I love it. So, in covering Philadelphia sports, what things have stuck out mostly about covering sports in this city for NBC Sports?
Come on, man. I mean, just think, Mike, you know, you go from, you know, I was in California. You mentioned Sacramento. When I was in Sacramento was when the Phillies had lost like their 11,000th game in team history, and that narrative was just everywhere. So I'm always like curious, like especially having traveled around, how different people outside of Philly view our teams and our city. It just really is fascinating to me. But we go from that type of narrative, and then the Phillies winning the World Series, and I was banging pots and pans in Sacramento. So me being on the friggin' float with the players for the Super Bowl parade. So, I mean, that's probably the thing that sticks out to me the most is I was on the Super Bowl parade, and, you know, Brent Celek's throwing me a beer that he caught, telling me to drink up. And I'm like, nah, I'm working. I'm not going to drink. But it's just like a surreal moments like that, man, where, you know, you grow up watching, covering, enjoying the team, you know, learning from people like you and Jenna Wolf and Mike Dardis and, you know, Gary Papa, and then actually getting the chance to put some of that stuff in action, having, you know, been in the footsteps with guys like John Clark and Kevin Negandhi at Temple and things like that. It's just very surreal, man, and I appreciate it and cherish it.
Well, that's very cool. Listen, it was glad to have you splash into my life there. I know that's some of these shows with Jenna. They were fun. Jenna was fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I mean, she would push the envelope. You guys were just great yin and yang. And, you know, you would bring that fire from the radio and, you know, working with Anthony and whatnot, and then come in and bring that same intensity. And it just was, when you walked in the room, there was definitely a whoosh that came with it.
It was a shame only 10 people watched that news. So, but it was cool.
Hey, man, you're still around, though.
I am. I'm a survivor. Listen, man, we can't wait for you guys to get back on the air. I know this has been tough on you. How's life been going being in isolation like this?
Trying to avoid some of the Groundhog Day vibes of these days. So, like, I just taped the Sixers Talk podcast. I have Sportsnet Central taping from home after this. I got my son's rock candy science experiment germinating in the corner. I got a 500-piece Phillies puzzle I'm trying to put together later on. You know the vibes, Mike. We're trying to make the most of it. So I'm luckier than some because I do have some space outside where we can get out and walk around and things like that and not be and keep our social distance. But just trying to continue to stay positive, man, and continue to give people content so they can enjoy this time as much as possible.
Well, that's very cool. And I also know or heard that you sing a little bit. You got some pipes. you sing at the office? Like what? How about like some...
Yeah.
How about some Instagram really? Live tunes? How about some posted tunes?
I like to fool around. I am nobody's singer. Amy Fadul gives me a hard time about that. I do have to tell you, though, that you should feel very fortunate because you work with some incredible people and Natalie Eganoff and Ty Johnson, because we interact all the time with the Sixers Talk show and Eagles Talk show and Eagles Outsiders and Sixers Outsiders, and they just do a phenomenal job. So definitely kudos to them.
Yes, very, very cool. I'm very fortunate to work with them. And so listen, man, we'll look forward to you giving back on the air. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on, Mike.
All right, man. There's Danny Pommels from NBC Sports Philadelphia.
Look at that.
Smooth Danny.
Hey.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Now, he must have looked so different back then.
He never really he posts pictures with the short hair.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he's ever posted on like social media the cornrows and stuff. I haven't seen on his social media.
I'd like to see the pictures of him with the cornrows.
Amy does also bully him.
Oh, Amy bullies him too?
Because they don't sit close to... Well, when he goes over, when he's prepping, he sits further away and he'll sing. And then what Amy does, the way she bullies you is she stands up and she just turns at first.
Uh-huh.
It just gives you a look.
Uh-huh.
But she has this look where you're like, and then she kind of makes him crack up. But it's really her way of telling him to shut up. She does that to me, too. Like, I have a good thing going. Like, I'll pass by certain people.
What, she needs to, like, quiet?
No.
Like, what's she need?
She does not suffer fools. So she thinks she's doing foolishness. Like, what's he singing over there?
Okay.
And she doesn't like it. She just gives the look.
Okay.
And then he'll crack up and breaks the momentum. Yes, he has this way about it.
So Danny, to soothe himself as he's preparing, will sing a little bit.
He's joking around, but he's being, I mean, I don't know if he's Luther Vandross, but he did sing like in the choir at the school. Like he had to try out. Like he made it. Like it was a tryout situation where there are definitely worse singers.
Oh, yeah. Well,
definitely.
He's got pipes. Yeah. A little bit. All right. Wide open lines now. Good time to get in. All the stuff we were talking about earlier. About corporations' responsibilities and health professionals that are out there doing it every day in the face of really a bad situation. Grocery store clerks, delivery people, tell us your stories, man. We'd love to hear them. And like I said before, we're all in this together. 610-632-0975. The Mike Mastella Show. It's on 97.5 The Fanatic and NBC Sports Philly.
The Mike Missinelli Show. .97.5 The Fanatic.
Hi, it's 3:49 on Mike Missinelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. I get this comedy movie thing in my head because a guy asked me once, and he threw a comedy at me on Twitter or email. I think that's not funny at all. And he was like, beside himself. Like, he goes, all right, what's your idea of a good comedy movie? And I started to think about it. I really didn't have a list in my head. But I was just walking to get some coffee, and I made a list in my head.
All right.
On what I think is funny.
Okay.
So, and you know me. Like, so you have this opinion of me that I don't like anything that's overly stupid. But that's not really correct.
Okay, it's just let's
there's
hear
something
it.
I don't know how to define it, because sometimes overly stupid can be overly funny because it's overly stupid. So here's how I go. The Midnight Run is absolutely my favorite. Then I would go with Trading Places.
Well, that's a great movie.
Number two.
That's a great movie.
I would go Office Space.
Fire funny.
Number three, tied with Caddyshack. And the reason I tie is because Caddyshack has a sports theme. But taken as a pure comedy movie, it's funny.
Okay.
All right. But I'll go Trading Space Places, Midnight Run, and Office Space. And then I go silly.
Okay.
Because then I'll go Anchorman, which is totally ridiculous, but smartly written.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, which you would probably never figure.
Now that is an upset.
Why?
I didn't think Mike would like it.
Yeah, oh. I think it's hysterical. An upset.
Oh, it's hysterical. Yeah, yes. It's great.
Now, it's also overly silly, but there's a fine line between overly stupid and overly silly. Like, for instance, this show that people raved about, that Danny McBride. What was that show called?
He's Bound and Down.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was the dumbest waste of time ever.
I thought it started funny, and then the character, I got tired.
Right, yeah, so I was going to say the laugh. Character there, was
there's
old.
A fine line for me between Ace Ventura, ridiculous, Danny McBride's Eastbound and Down, totally unwatchable.
Okay.
You know, I can't define it. But those five, I would go, there you go.
That's a good
And I'm probably
list.
Missing something else in there that was overly funny and I'm not thinking about right now that I could easily replace Office Space with, maybe.
You and Anthony have similar takes on comedy, but you have a more open mind for comedy.
Oh, I definitely do. He has no open mind for comedy.
I bet you if you asked him his top five, he wouldn't get past three.
He would go Midnight Run, absolutely, because we were texting back and forth. We were texting lines back and forth yesterday.
So he would go
there. He would go Midnight Run, absolutely.
And I bet you he would end up going Trading Places as well.
I don't know if he would go Trading Places. I think it starts and ends with Midnight Run.
Might be the only movie.
I think he's done with comedy after that.
He could be. He's pretty bad when it comes to that comedy thing. He thinks it's beneath him.
Yeah. Now, I know there are probably a lot of new school comedies that people like. I'm just going, like, classic for me were those five.
All right. Those I got to rewatch the Midnight Run, but since it's on, I'll
it's, dude, I can't believe you had to admit. It's almost on every week.
Yeah, I'll find
like, it. It's like the ultimate late, like, go-to movie. Like, it's always on later at night.
Yeah, because it's been a really long time since I've seen it, so yeah, I'll go
it's,
back.
Yeah, it's hysterical. And, like, simple line, like, he'll deliver a lot. Comes out of nowhere. Like, they're walking, and they're just frustrated they can't get to L.A. De Niro's just out of his mind. And Gordon goes, have you ever had this dish, Leonese potatoes? It's a really good dish. Like, the dialogue comes out of nowhere. Like, what the hell? Where does that come from? And I'm thinking that he's ad-libbing the whole thing. And De Niro's just going along with it.
Because he's that talented, he can keep
right.
up.
Right. And then the litmus configuration, where they go into the bar and they try to get the money.
Yeah.
I think Grodin's making all this stuff up. And De Niro's just following his lead. Now, I haven't read anything about it, but I got to think that this thing was all Grodin rather than writing. All right, let's go Jimmy and Drexel Hill. Jimmy, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jimmy.
Hey, Mikey Miss.
What's up, Jimmy?
Hey. Yeah, I just wanted to get the word out. You know, I've been on hanging on the phone for a while, but I just wanted, you know, with the corporate giants, my wife just got a text last night from her local GM, regional guy, that she works at the Gap,
mm-hmm.
and the Gap furloughed all their employees, I guess all the retail store employees, come Thursday. And, you know, and they basically tell you, you know, apply for unemployment. And that's just another one of those corporate giants.
Well, again, here's
come up with the buck.
Yeah, here's the dilemma, though, because their stores are shut down. They're doing no business. All right? So I guess that you have to take that into consideration, because you don't want to just pay out, lose money. You want to have something coming back. They can't do business at all. So there's a balance to that. I'm talking about the people that are still doing business that are asking to do cuts.
Yeah,
you know, and you would think, you know, in a perfect world, they, you know, the Gap, like, all these retail stores are closed, so they're not bringing in a dollar worth of revenue except for online revenue. And so you can say, okay, yeah, but you've made it in the past, and you're not going to go out of business because this is going to be 6 months. So you have an obligation to pay. That's the argument. I don't know what's the right argument, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I get that part. But, you know, it's another large, giant store that, you know, after like a month or two, however long it takes to go back to work.
Right. So you're saying they should
find another job.
Right. They should be able to bite the bullet, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Or do a pay cut or mm-hmm. do something to supplement or you're out of work.
I hear you, Jimmy. And see, this is an at-will employment society, which means you're not guaranteed any job. Like, they can fire you at will no matter what they think, and you have no protection that way except maybe union protection. So I hear where you're coming from. Now, there are people that are being asked to take pay cuts that have contracts. You know, which is, I mean, you're supposed to have some kind of protection from that with a contract.
Yep. I just wanted to get that out there with the, you know, with another big giant like the Gap.
Yeah, no, I hear you, Jimmy. I don't know. Tyrone, what's the responsibility here? The Gap. It's just one corporation out of many that is the overly wealthy monster corporation
that is
furloughing their people because their stores can't open.
That's a tough thing, though, because the certain franchises are individually owned in some cases.
With the Gap?
I thought it was. It's not?
I don't know. I don't think it would be. They have managers of the store, but I think it's under corporate control.
If it's under corporate control and they have the money,
mm-hmm.
then to me, now seems a little too soon because everyone's assuming the worst, and I understand. But what would happen if you furlough everybody like that? And then in 2 weeks, the curve is flattened.
Yeah.
And they start letting people back in. You haven't done a lot of goodwill for your people there. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people, I get they're anticipating the worst, but they're jumping to, we're taking people out now. And I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing, because I think that causes more panic.
All right, we'll talk about that more on the other side. And you can climb it at 610-622-0975. Stay tuned for our fast cash giveaway of $1,000. That's coming up as soon as we come out in the 4 o'clock hour on the Mike Missanelli Show, back after this.